So the funny thing about it.
What's the funny thing about it?
Well, I'll tell you.
All right. I'm just waiting to hear the funny thing about it.
Well, that was my... Fuck you. That was my cut back in, so I'm going to edit that part out.
Oh, well, let's try it again.
See what happens.
That can be the intro. Funny thing about it. Fuck you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the Princess of Garbage. Princess of Slime!
Boo! Boo! Boob!
Boob!
My name is Gus of the Brothers Movie Factory. You listen to my podcast, Prepare to Die.
You wouldn't happen to have six fingers on your left hand?
Sorry, I only got eight.
Shit. Indeed. Gus over there, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And here we are, everyone. Here we are, February, month of love. Valentine's Day, month-a-thon, and that. And we decided again last week, we did a discussion on Valentine's Day. This week, we're doing our first of three romantic movies. First one, Princess Bride. That's what we did this week. And so if you're not familiar with what we do here, let me explain. Let me sit you down in a chair and give you the quick rundown, not featuring The Rock. All right. Every week.
Actually, instead of sitting us in a bed, maybe you can sit us. Wait, that's what I wanted. So sitting us down, lay us in a bed, tell us what we do here on the podcast, but read it like you're Peter Falk. Say it to us like you're an old man with one good eye.
Oh, okay. You know, I can see you're taking this very seriously. Maybe we should just stop the show.
No, you can just say it the way you do.
Okay. Anyways, what we do here on the pod is every week we take a film, we watch said film, we then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, just modern booking, the modern era of film. So with that being said, again, it is Valentine's Day, month-a-thon and that, and we decided to watch Princess Bride as our first film of the month. What a film it is. What a whimsical, nice film it is.
Wholesome, beautiful, sweet, adventurous.
And hey, it's cool.
It is cool. You know, when I was wee, and I'm talking real wee, not wee you, but wee, I refused to watch this movie because I thought it was a kissing movie. I thought it was a girl's movie. It's Princess Bride. And our cousin, she loved this movie and would always want to watch it. And I never wanted to. But I remember, I think it was against my will, I watched it. And keeping it to myself, but saying I liked it. And... or keeping it to myself that I liked it. But the real reason I got talked into watching it, if I recall now, was because they said there were really cool sword fights and really big monster rats.
Hey.
And they weren't wrong.
You mean rodents of unusual size?
Yes, indeed.
I can't tell you the first time I watched this movie. I do, for whatever reason, have a very strong memory of watching this at our grandmother's house in our hometown on her tiny TV, like a tiny TV in the bedroom, and I recall watching it. And I don't know if it was because... it was one of, like, the six movies she had. I can't remember. We were borrowing it, or we were renting it, or...
it was easily one of probably the three movies she had.
And that, yes. You've Got Mail.
Mm-hmm.
And the Barbara Streisand collection.
Well, I guess there's that crap. But there was The Rescuers.
The Rescuers, indeed. Yeah, so she owned this movie, so that's why I have a memory of watching it there on the tiny TV. but because, you know, she barely got Nickelodeon. But
she didn't even have Sega.
Yeah, I know. God damn it. But indeed, this is a movie that I always liked. I can't remember a time where I didn't find the movie just enjoyable to watch. It really is. It's a very easy watch. And you know, something that caught me off guard this watch through was when I booted her up, seeing the runtime. It's only like an hour and 38 minutes long. It's not a long movie, but it gets its point across. And it's very. Mm-hmm. Very whimsical. I mean, within the first, like, 5 minutes, it builds up a better love story than most movies.
I would say within the first 2 minutes. Yeah. The
first 2 minutes are still Fred Savage and the old man. So I don't know.
Better love story than those things.
So far, all we've seen is hate from Fred Savage, so I don't know what you're looking at.
I like the beginning. Fred Savage is sick in bed, and the grandfather comes over to spend some time with them, and he is played by Peter Falk. He comes and he goes Fred Savage a present. He's like, "Here, a present for you." I was like, "Here, cigars."
So you like reading books, do you? Here, yeah. We'll smoke a whole carton of cigars.
Smoke a whole carton of books. Yeah, and then he reads them, "The Princess Bride."
My father, your son, read this book to me.
Columbo, the mystery of why the hell am I here? So, yeah, and in the very beginning, you get this love story of old Buttercup and Wesley. So, first off, Buttercup, what a name. And Wesley, not a very cool name. Dread very, Pirate Roberts, now that's cool. Yeah. But yes, as you said, not only is it a great love story right there, but classic line, "As you wish," spoken there. And good stuff. And I'll say this right off the bat. This movie is a classic, not even a cult classic, just a classic.
Yes.
And is so popular and has only continued to grow in popularity. It just had its 30-year anniversary a few years ago, and it's a very popular fantasy film, fantasy romance in the zeitgeist of human population.
And why is that? I mean, because the story's fairly simple, right? It's
a classic story. Yeah,
farmhand and her farmhand and the daughter of the owner of the farm fall in love. It's not like necessarily a forbidden romance, but it's true love. And Wesley goes off to make his fortune while he's leaving Buttercup behind. Buttercup thinks he has died. The king of the kingdom decides to marry a commoner as a kind of a ploy to, I mean, I guess, make relations with the people better, mm-hmm. but also he has a plot in mind for Buttercup as well. Buttercup gets kidnapped, and Wesley comes to the rescue as the Dread Pirate Roberts, which is, from then on out, it's Buttercup trying to get back to Wesley, and Wesley trying to get back to Buttercup.
Indeed, and what a grand adventure it is stretched throughout your hour 38-minute runtime. There's so much adventuring that goes on, whether it's swashbuckling or a game of wits or battles with giants or
eels.
Eels.
Big rivers.
Eels. What else is there in the torture and evil plots, possible war between nations. So much happens, and it's done so well. It's directed by Rob Reiner. And this is the movie that almost never was.
Schneider.
Yeah. This movie was written way back before this movie came out in, I think it was the 70s, or maybe it was the 60s, but 70s, we'll say. And the author of this book, he had sold the rights to it to be made into a film. And there it sat. It was early 70s now that I'm remembering. And it just, nothing was happening with it. It was in developmental hell. And funny story about it is, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My screen just shut off. I don't know why.
Nice. Now you're just in a dark room.
There, here we are.
You'll start to hear Babadook.
The funny thing about it is the author wrote the role of Fessick, the giant in the movie, for Andre the Giant. However, at this time when they're trying to make the movie, Andre the Giant was way too popular. He was too expensive. He was at the height of his popularity as a professional wrestler. He was world renowned at the time. Way too big. So you know who was cast as Fessick? Was Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wasn't real big in movies yet. He was trying to really break in, and he was going to be their giant, even though he's not big.
Just
tall.
As hard to understand.
What's that?
Just as hard to understand, though, at the time.
Especially at the time. And fast forward to when they were actually going to be able to make this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger, too big, too popular, too expensive, but Andre the Giant, just the right price.
Hey.
So
this is only movie credit, too?
Andre the Giant?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
Well, indeed. I mean, he's perfect. I mean, the casting of this film is really perfect. I mean, you have Cary Elwes being sly. And you know, what's funny is I've really only seen him in several things, and the only two that ever come to mind are this and Robin Hood Men in Tights, more recently Stranger Things.
What about Liar Liar, where he's got the claw? The claw will get you.
See, I haven't seen Liar Liar in like 15 years.
So it doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count anymore. But I was saying the movies that come to mind. Like, I didn't even know Cary Elwes was in that movie. So, indeed. You know, you have Manny Patinkin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's phenomenal in it. And I didn't realize that he played Inigo until probably a year or two ago. It was on the show that I realized. I think you brought it up once. You casted him, and I realized that because I know him mostly from Criminal Minds, because in the first handful of seasons of Criminal Minds, he plays like one of the main people. But even right down to the grandpa, he's perfect. Perfect grandpa character, right? Just all the casting was just well done throughout, and it does, the story reads like a book, watches like a book. It does definitely kind of intersect into chapters almost, where there's like little brief snippets, because you even said, you're like, whether it's the sword fight, which, like, let's talk about that. Like, so these three men, Inigo, Fessick, and Stewie's brother, I forget that actor's name.
Wallace Shawn, but what is his character's name?
Something
inconceivable. Maybe it's inconceivable. Yeah. Maybe it's inconceivable that we don't know his character. Vizzini.
Vizzini, you told me to go to the beginning. So they kidnap Princess Buttercup, and their plan is to get her to the border of a neighboring country, kill her, and basically frame the neighboring country and cause a war to break out. And later, obviously, spoilers, you find out that the king had actually hired him to do so, because he wants to go to war. Let's start with that, because they realize that someone's following them. They get to this giant cliff. They're climbing up the cliff. The man pursues, and that's like the first real charming moment in this movie, where Inigo, the swordsman, has to stay behind to stop this man from chasing them any further, and they all go away with Buttercup, Vizzini, Fessick, Buttercup go away, and Inigo's staying there to sword fight this guy, and just the dialogue, the back and forth between Wesley and Inigo Mandy Patinkin and
Carrie
Elwes is just so, I don't know. There's like a familiarity there. They're just going back and forth.
You guys sound like Michael Keaton there.
All right.
I don't know.
I'll kill you and everyone you love.
It's a brilliant scene. Their dialogue together, the confidence Inigo has as a swordsman because he's done nothing but study the art of fencing for 20 years. And
going to duel him with my left hand.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting at, the confidence that he has to fight anybody because he has this life goal. And it's almost like a friendship that blooms right away between the two. Like, it's more out of respect. But yeah, I really like their quips back and forth to each other, whether words or swords. But
it makes you want to pick up fencing.
It does. And what is it, like acrobatics with the bar where you spin around and stuff. What I will say is a down for me, and this is sad. I hate doing this, and this is the first time I've ever pointed this out. But Blu-ray did me bad. The picture is too good. In the shots of Andre the Giant or Fezzik carrying everyone on the rope up the mountain cliff.
Yeah.
Mountain cliff. Fuck me. Up the cliff.
Up the mountain cliff wall.
And it's zoomed out and they're climbing. You can see a cable, like a black cable pulling them up as they're climbing. Same with Wesley.
I didn't notice on my tiny screen.
Yeah, the damn me and my Blu-ray and my, 75-inch TV.
And your 20/20 vision. Damn your eyes!
Yeah. Too late. So that was a bit of a bummer. And even later, it's pretty obvious I don't need Blu-ray to see this, but when Wesley's fighting Fezzik in hand-to-hand combat, and he's choking him out, and Fezzik's slamming him against the rock, clearly... That's not Fezzik. That's not Andre the Giant. It's some larger actor wearing a mask.
But he had a really bad back, though. Because let's go from that. Like you get they're building character through these moments because you see, like you said, the confidence with Inigo. He's very charismatic and fighting, and you can tell that him, Inigo, and Fezzik aren't bad people. And then Wesley, it's Wesley, obviously, but, he's wearing a mask, thinks that all people will be wearing masks. Very comfortable.
They'll be all the rage.
You have Fezzik, who is told by Vizzini to hit him with a rock. He says that's not very sportsmanlike. Has this toe-to-toe fight. Mano a mano fight with Andre the Giant, picks him up and slams him. Not really, though. But it's just like you get the character build that these people, like, they aren't bad guys. And that's kind of, I always like that you kind of know that they're going to play a bigger role later without having it actually, like, expressly told that they will be a bigger role later.
Right. And as we were getting at, Andre the Giant. And real life was not in a good way. Horrible back, bad knees. Not just like they're bothering him; like he was in constant pain from all the years of wrestling and just his condition and his lifestyle. He didn't move very well throughout this movie. He had like very little strength. Throughout, and I mean, he did pass away about 8 years after this film, but his remaining years, were spent little movement, if any. He was using aid to get around, and it's sad. Even we'll work our way through the movie, but in the end, when Buttercup gets thrown to Fezzik to be caught, in reality. It was, what's her name?
Buttercup?
Yeah, what's the actress's name? Robin Wright was just dropped about a foot. And even that was almost too much for Andre to catch. And he had a board supporting him that you can actually see behind him, just keeping him upright while they did that little stunt. So it's kind of sad knowing that and then watching the movie. But
so Andre enjoy.
Yeah. Andre the Giant's so good, though, and his character's so sweet and kind-hearted. He's just a gentle giant, exactly that. And he was quoted in saying in an interview, like, what was your favorite part of being a part of Princess Bride? And he said that I can walk around and no one looks at me, as in no one looks at me like I'm something strange or a freak or like I fit in here kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you get that sense. And from everything I've ever read or watched about Andre the Giant, that was kind of who he was. He was a gentle giant. He was a nice person. He had a kind of a... Did he have a drinking problem, or could he just crush fucking beers?
He didn't have a drinking problem. If anything, he had the opposite of that, and he could drink
too much.
All.
Yeah. Because yeah. I've read stories where he like drank cases by himself.
Oh yeah, like hundreds of beers in a night kind of deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pound them down.
Crushing it. Then we get to, so obviously Wesley takes down the swordsman and then the giant. And now he has to take down the intellect. was that good?
Yeah, it was good.
And that moment's a fun one too, because he basically challenges Vizzini to figure out the poison, which cup would have the poison in it. I don't even know how that's necessarily a game of wit. It's more a game of chance.
Yeah, exactly.
to that degree, which I think maybe is the joke, because like he's so dumb that he also fell for it. But it is interesting too that like that plot line where he thinks he has won. Vizzini thinks he has chosen the correct cup, but Wesley actually has a immunity to the poison he used that he built up, which is also quite clever.
Exactly.
Which then leads to him and Buttercup's kind of discussion, and she realizes that he is not just the Dread Pirate Roberts, he is Wesley.
And how does she find that out? Now, how did she know that?
And she shoves him down a cliff to kill him, and he says, "You as you wish," because she says, "You can die too."
That's not what he says.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say it a little slower.
As you wish.
Yes. It's just... I don't know what it is about Cary Elwes in this. I mean, I haven't seen Robin Hood Men in Tights in a long time, but it's the way he talks. He's like very confident and quick in his line delivery.
What do you mean, confident and quick?
Yeah, see? Even that. Even when he's explaining the story of how he's the Dread Pirate Roberts, he's like, the man told me that he was not the Dread Pirate Roberts. He got the ship from this man, who was also not the Dread Pirate Roberts. Found out the Dread Pirate Roberts had been living... Like, he's so quick and just really confident in his delivery. It makes him feel really charismatic. Yeah, I don't know. They go into the... There's, like, so many whimsical things, because then they find their way into the fire swamp. This swamp that literally has fire pits, shooting, like, geysers of fire, and fighting RUSs, rodents of unusual size. I don't think they exist. I don't know. There's so many whimsical moments, even like, just great world building to this kind of fictitious take on ancient Europe, or not ancient Europe, but medieval Europe, right down to shortly after them getting out, they're met by the king, and Buttercup agrees to go with him as long as they let Wesley live, and Wesley is actually taken to be tortured, and there he stays, basically, for the remainder of the movie.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I mean, it's been forever since I've seen this movie, but yeah, he gets tortured pretty early, and which leaves, at least physically, him out of the game the rest of the adventure. But through that, you get those previous characters get to come back, and they get to shine. Inigo and Fezzik, and they get to show their heroic side. And I've always liked movies and stories in general, where you got the villain characters, or I guess the antagonist characters, who end up turning a leaf and joining the heroes to save the day. I've always liked stuff like that, and this did it really well. And it helps it. You have some lovable characters. And fun fact, my favorite example of that is in Castle in the Sky, when the Dola gang ends up teaming with Shita and Patsu to save the day. One of the members of the Dola gang is voiced by Mandy Patinkin.
Hey.
Hey.
Is it the dad? Or one of the boys?
He's one of the boys.
One of the boys.
He's just one of the boys.
Hey, have it you feels ever heard, like an ego ever, would be one of the boys.
Have you ever heard Mandy Patinkin sing?
No. Is it beautiful?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. He's a Broadway star, right? See, he's mostly known for musicals and things, but one of my favorite songs he has sung is actually in Dick Tracy. He plays a character of 88 Keys, and he sings a duet with Madonna called What Would You Lose?
Or Madonna!
Yeah, and it's gorgeous. It's just interesting how they can come back, and you get some classic scenes because they rescue Wesley from being tortured.
Talk about that. Like, that's another thing. Like, it's just cool world building and fictitious things. Like, that torture machine that Wesley's hooked up to, it's like, it just sucks years off his life. That's like, that's what it does.
Oh, it sucks years off the life, but weren't those little suction cups hooked up to his nipples?
Ecstasy.
My nipples. Yeah, crank it up to 50. Not 50.
Yeah, because the king tries to kill him because Buttercup refuses to marry.
That's right. And
he's jealous.
Wesley gives out a big old yelp, and Inigo hears that yelp. He's like, I know that yelp. That is the same cry I gave when my father was killed by the Six-Fingered Man. So they know where to find him. They save the day, or they don't save the day. He's fucking dead.
He's only mostly dead, as Mike Wazowski tells us later.
Yeah, Calcifer, the fire demon. Which leads to, yet again, another classic scene. I even said it after the scene was over. I'm like, that was very brief, but these two characters are so memorable. They take him to, what is his name?
Miracle Max. Liar!
I was called a Magic Mike.
I hope not. Hey, hey kids, another, you want to go see that new Billy Crystal movie, Magic Mike?
No, I only saw Magic Mike XL.
Ah. Featuring Billy Crystal and John Goodman.
Hell yeah. Yes, but you get this great duo played by Carol Kane and Billy Crystal. And they're so funny playing these like old forest dwellers. And Miracle Max agrees to attempt to help bring Wesley back to life, as long as it's to, you know, take a shot at the King Humperdinck, or Prince Humperdinck, or just Humper fucking Dink.
That's exactly what he says.
Fuck that Humperdinck.
I'll take 60. I mean, there's some cool things in that, though, too, because they make a pill to bring him back to life from being mostly dead, but also even, like, the using I forget what it's called, but the thing that like fans a flame to pump air into his lungs to make him breathe. It is cool little things. And then you get a pretty memorable scene again showing Cary Elwes was being really fucking smooth with him not being able to really move his head or his arms.
Yeah.
And just kind of talking, and him, his head going back and forth, and the movie just never stops. Really, I feel like it's there's constantly something enjoyable. It's a very pleasant movie to watch because there's never any like downtime. It's got a story to tell, and it tells it very quickly and very effectively. And even like it's still making the characters even more lovable. Like you just wiggled your finger. Aren't you excited about that? Like, just stupid shit like that. It just makes it fun.
Anybody want a peanut?
And they come up with a great plan to storm the castle.
And they have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and that leads to another classic scene, the wedding with the whatever. The
marriage.
Marriage. Yeah, classic stuff like that that people quote endlessly to this day. I think I'm gonna say Wesley. Carrie Elwes and Mandy Patinkin have both said that they get fans shouting lines from this movie 30 years later at them every day. I mean, it's a special movie. I know Mandy Patinkin has said this is his favorite character he's ever played. And yeah, it's just very special to people. And it's special to me too, for those classic scenes, for the fun adventure, for the classic characters. And, yeah, we get to join in the finale here where, Fessick and Inigo and Wesley storm the castle to save Buttercup. And wouldn't you know it, Inigo stumbles into a hallway with the Six-Fingered Man.
Yeah, and even that's, like, good, because Six-Fingered Man, up to this point, has been very arrogant and cocky, and then you kind of see his true colors as he gets challenged, and he turns her away and runs after Inigo cuts down, like, six people. But then, yeah, that's probably my favorite part in the entire movie, and I think you said it made you tear up a bit. Weep some tears.
Yeah, it made some Princess Bride tears. That's for sure.
Not Dragonheart, though.
No, of course not.
He was standing up, saying his mantra, and it started doing the Dragonheart theme, would you have cried?
Probably not, because it wouldn't have fit.
I don't know about that. I think Dragonheart theme fits everywhere.
I'd be like, Princess Bride, you don't deserve this theme either. But yeah, when
replace the Imperial March with the Dragonheart theme.
Quit interrupting me.
I'll interrupt you as much as I goddamn please.
You're gonna do it anyway.
Anyway, so as I was saying.
So the funny thing is when Inigo finally gets to fight this man who he's been chasing for 20 years to avenge his father's death, he gets stabbed in the stomach by a flying dagger. And do you think that's it for old Inigo and the Six-Fingered Man? What's his real name? Count Rugen or something?
Yes.
I think that's it. He goes to stab Inigo and he like faintly puts up the sword and then crosses the other way. And then he finally gets to say the words. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. The thing he's been reciting in his mind and his heart for all this time. And he gets up. And he's fighting him with everything he's got. He just keeps repeating it. Hello, my name is Andy. Like he's just going. It's just so. It's just a culmination, and I feel for that character. And I just I broke down. I cried.
It's an epic,
very
moment.
Passionate
it's
very, scene.
It's up there with it in terms of it's not passionate, but it's like an underdog story, and then also it kind of makes you. He's getting his revenge. It's a satisfying end. To a good character and a satisfying end to a bad character, like a bad guy. That makes it all the more enjoyable to watch. The scene with... Oh, I'm sorry?
He's got the one of the best lines here, too. He's what's he say? He says, like, give me this. He's like, of course. He's like, give me money. As much as you would like. So tell me you'll give me anything I want. You can have anything or whatever your heart desires, whatever he says. But the best line, he's like, I want my father back, you son of a bitch. And he guts him. That's good shit.
Yeah. He's a six-fingered man. You son of a bitch. then
and they shake hands like Dylan, but then one other finger just wraps around.
He would kill in a fucking arm wrestling contest. He'd go over the top twice. Then you get the cool scene with Wesley and Buttercup in the bedroom, the bridal suite, the honeymoon suite. She kissed me.
that cracked me up.
Yeah, that's another epic moment because the king is basically threatening to kill Wesley, and then he shows his true colors as Wesley stands up and tells him to drop your sword. And he does, but then, yes, Wesley, but even, like, there's so many little things. The movie, a movie like this does perfect, it makes you hate the villain, but it also makes you kind of like the villain at the same time. Because even after that moment, he's, like, telling Wesley he's bluffing, and he gets tied up, and they come in, and Wesley kind of falls over, and he's like, I knew he was bluffing. Like, he gets real nervous. Like, I don't know, it makes you, it adds some levity to a scene. And then, you have Fezzik with his horses, and it's just it's a fairy tale ending, if you will.
And has one of the best kiss shots, in my opinion, with the sun setting in the background.
Yes.
Perfect smooch. But you don't want to hear any of that.
Similar attack on Attack of the Clones. I'm going to say Attack on Titan. Similar Attack of the Clones, end of the movie. Naboobs.
Anyway,
better music in Attack of the Clones.
That's gonna be, I don't know, I feel like an asshole to say it, because it adds to the charm of the movie, but this music, it's not it. At least not for me.
It's just very older music.
It sounds cheap. It sounds like it's just synth music, and I'm kind of like, eh. I can't remember what band, but it was it was some member of a band who did the music for Princess Bride. And it's, I don't know. It's just like I don't know. It's underwhelming. It's kind of cheesy. Yeah, it's kind
of
cheesy.
It reminds me of, like, music that you would find in a Mel Brooks movie. Or, like, even...
like, an old TV... Like, it sounds like something that was on, like, I don't know, Goosebumps or something. Yeah. Like, that's what I mean by it sounds cheap a little bit.
But, well...
I might get a lot of shit for that, but, yeah, that's just how I feel.
Well, you know, let's get shit for something else here. So, throughout the movie, we talked about how good the characters were, how good the casting was. But, you know, if you're ready, any final thoughts before we get to the factory?
Just branching off what I just said, music's not my bag. However, great theme. The tune of the theme is great. No more can be said. It's a wonderful film. If you've never seen it, it's one of those. If you've never seen this movie,
what are you waiting for?
Well, that. But if someone presents it to you, like, you're in for a real treat.
Yes. This is a film that the wife does not like because a friend of hers in college liked it so much she watched it constantly. And
is that what you say about Harry Potter?
That's what I should say about a lot of movies, but, you know, here we are. At this point in time, let's take this film to the factory. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Now, for today's film, primarily going to be focused on the actors, not so much the composer. And then, Gus, you do have a director in mind, correct?
Indeed.
All right, so we're going to do the director. We're going to look at Humperdinck, Grandpa, Fezzik, Inigo, Buttercup, and Wesley Snipes.
Who the hell is Grandpa Fezzik?
I said Grandpa, comma, Fezzik. indeed. So, director, who'd you have?
Director, I mean, I just picked Mark Webb. He directed my favorite romantic comedy of all time. He's also done some bigger budget films.
He also directed your favorite Spider-Man.
Not true. But he is a very talented director. And with something like 500 Days of Summer, which we'll be talking about next week, kids, just romance at its finest, or maybe at its worst. Tune in and find out. But that's who I have picked to direct our Princess Bride.
Works for me. So then let's get into the casting here. One of our first characters that we see, Grandpa, the Grandpa character. Who would you have play that role? Who do you think can play a kind of a grandpa that maybe comes across as like the one the kid would be like, oh man, grandpa's here, but by the end can win him over and make him want you to come back.
About crazy Jack Nicholson.
I don't want to scare the kid away. See, at this point, Buttercup jumped off the boat and was met by 1,000 screaming eels. His eyebrows are going the entire goddamn time. The kid's fucking pissing himself.
Oh my god. I had someone a little more warm. Someone who's still a little gruff, though. You understand what I'm saying? He's still gruff. That's Bob De Niro.
That's what I had as well.
Friend Bob De Niro. Oh, you had Bob De Niro?
I had Bob De Niro as well, yeah.
Hey.
I was torn. I was torn between him and Al Pacino. But Al Pacino gave me the same vibes. He might scare the kid. At this point in time. All right.
We're going to read a fucking book.
Yeah.
And you're going to sit there. You're going to sit there and you're going to listen to it. I'm going to talk real fast. And I'm going to talk real slow.
Yeah, see? It'd be terrifying. So, yeah, I also had Robert De Niro. Because, I mean, he's used to playing the grandpa role at this point in time. I think his most recent film, that's a lie, but he was in a recent film where he played a grandpa that moved in to his daughter's house or something. And he took the boy's, like, the little boy's room away, his grandson's room away, and was, like, living in his room. And the boy went to war with his grandpa. I think the movie might be called War with Grandpa or something like that.
That is exactly what it's called.
Yuck. He was also a bad grandpa and dirty grandpa.
I say he wasn't bad grandpa. I even thought about doing that, just be an asshole and be like, Johnny Knoxville is our grandpa.
Thank God. But then you're like, I'm going to cast Johnny Knoxville as nothing in this movie.
You are correct.
Well, then let's just get to our next underwhelming, I'll say underwhelming pick, Fezzik. Because we both know who we chose. Fezzik, obviously, Andre the Giant. Who better to play this role than the man who pretty much filled his shoes in the world? I mean, it's impossible to fill Andre the Giant's shoes, but the next giant we saw, the man that was called the Giant for a while.
The man who was pitched as being the son of Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
That's
the Big Show.
Well, yeah, Paul White, Big Show.
He's been in a lot of movies. Played Big Santa Claus once.
Played Big Santa. He'll deck your halls. And he's Captain Insano. He shows no mercy.
Yeah. I almost said Kevin Nash, but I feel like Kevin Nash would be like, what's this movie? Fuck.
He's like, I only play Super Shredder. That's it.
Yeah.
Big Show. That's of course.
Easy, obvious pick. Yeah, indeed. You know who else would be good? A good Fezzik, just to keep in line with the Giant, but also the... Not to say that Andre the Giant didn't speak English very well, but he didn't speak English very well. Yeah, nor do I. Great Khali would have been interesting. Different take, obviously, not French, but
yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
He would have been interesting in that too, because he also has that where he doesn't really have the English, and that would probably be more in line.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And but Khali,
we picked Big Show.
We did. Is Khali taller than Big Show?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. He's like 7'2".
Yeah, he's taller, but he's not bigger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, Big Show's in like fantastic shape now and shit, too.
That's true.
He's still all right, next, let's go with Humperdinck. Who'd you have to play Humperdinck?
Humperdinck.
Yeah.
Humperdinck.
Don't even say the name.
I'm thinking of a very talented actor that has world-renowned hate for playing royalty. Who better to play that kind of a character than Ewan Rion?
Let me guess, he's Joffrey.
No, he's worse. He's Ramsay in Game of Thrones. Great actor. Ewan Rion? R-H-E-O-N.
Okay.
He doesn't even know how to pronounce it. Yeah, great actor, great performances. He gives he's in something else. It is more of like a romantic role, but my brain went to him for this this particular role because of his hate, or the hate he generated from his role in Game of Thrones. Right. He'll be in the he was in the Inhumans as well.
Mm,
interesting. Okay. And he's been in Family Guy. How about?
Hey, I think everyone's been in it once. Humpadink, for my Humpadink, I wanted to go with an actor, like I said, he's a good villain because he does things that make you kind of dislike him, or you make him dislike him greatly, but also make you kind of like him at the same time. Like, he's got some charisma to him, he's got some fun moments, and things of that nature. And I went with someone that recently, I don't know if you've seen any clips of this show, there's a show, I forget what channel it's on, I watched some of it on YouTube, though, called Miracle Workers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, I think it's on TBS, and it's a weekly, like, they do, it's not like sketch comedy, but it's like, I don't know, they change up every season, like, what they're doing, and they bring back the cast, and it's like a different storyline, or different, and the most recent one was Miracle Workers, the Middle Ages, and Daniel Radcliffe plays, like, a knight, or a king, I think he plays the king, if I recall. It's been like a year since I watched the clips, but he was really, really funny, but really believable and like really interesting. So I chose Daniel Radcliffe to play our king. Who better? Daniel, Danny boy.
Hey, I think Daniel Radcliffe's very talented. I think he's very funny, but
he'd be too lovable.
I think he's very versatile, so I'm all for it, but let's see what the coin decides. And we got heads, you, tails, me. We got tails. Mm-hmm. Ramses, how are you?
That's when you said he plays Ramsay, because I haven't watched Game of Thrones, I went to that. I just pictured a big man in a gold mask. Because that's not naturally what we should go to.
Not quite.
What about Inigo? Who you got for Inigo?
Inigo, this is so tough. This is where it starts to get like
it was very tough. Easy for me.
Yeah,
it's almost immediate.
It's the problem we have throughout the show, of our show. You got these classic characters, and to say you're going to recast them for today's people is impossible, because one, they're irreplaceable, but two, you know, there's probably someone who could be perfect that's just slipping your mind, but or maybe I picked it, who knows. But I went with someone very talented, can play a plethora of different characters, including a Spaniard with a lust for vengeance. And I picked Sacha Baron Cohen.
Mm.
Golden Globe nominated, maybe even winning, I can't remember. Most known for playing Borat, and he's in Les Mis, and what's it called? Sweeney Todd. Amongst other things, he's very popular, very talented. He's a brilliant mind for acting and character work, and that's where I wanted it to shine, in the character work for Inigo.
So I went with the obvious choice for the job, quickly becoming one of the biggest actors, I'd say, in Hollywood, whether it be TV or movie.
And I know who you're gonna pick.
Pedro Pascal.
Joel himself.
The Mandalorian. Why not? You know, it seems like a really easy pick, and he is quickly becoming a very big star. Because he started in Game of Thrones, or that was like his first big role, at least to like a Western or American audiences, rather. And then, you know, finds himself as the Mandalorian. He was one of the main villains in the newest Wonder Woman movie. And he just got cast as Joel. He's in a Netflix movie called We Can Be Heroes that is supposedly actually really good. It's more of a kid. It's a very Robert Rodriguez movie, but it's supposed to be very good. If you were a feeling nostalgic about like Spy Kids-esque films. But yeah, yeah, sure. I feel like, did you watch the trailer for We Could Be Heroes?
I don't think so.
It's an interesting premise. It's like the world has a bunch of superheroes and the kids.
Not only that. Yeah. That's,
ties in.
It's a tie-in to Sharkboy and Lavagirl.
Yeah, because it's their kids. The kids of Sharkboy and Lavagirl, which is very interesting as well. Only it's not Taylor Lautner. Not Taylor Lautner. But anyways, he's quickly becoming one of the biggest stars in the world, and I think that he would be able to bring the charisma to this character. I know The Mandalorian obviously doesn't show that so much, but in Wonder Woman, at least the clips I've seen of him, he is like a charismatic businessman. He's going to be playing Joel. That's obviously kind of closer to... It's funny because it's kind of closer to the Mandalorian role, which I could imagine would help them, casting him. But yeah, Pedro Pascal just seems like the easy pick and the right one to make that does not require a coin toss, but whatever.
Let's see. It doesn't require a coin toss, but let's see what the coin says. Your heads, me tails, and hey, it's heads.
Hey.
Don't worry, you're fine.
Yeah, we'll take it. What about your buttercup? My little buttercup.
You know what? I had a little bit of a hard time finding or thinking of a proper buttercup.
I didn't.
Princess Butterface. So
don't say that.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't have any trouble with it. But ultimately, when I did think of someone, yes, it's someone we use often. But she seems like a proper princess. Hell, she's been one in Disney before. And kind of going off of your vibes for Humperdinck, I'm going for my buttercup. I'm going Emma Watson. Hermione herself, Belle. Belle herself.
Belle. Hello, Belle. I went with someone who hasn't necessarily played princess, but is very good in these period dramas, these not present day feels, and that's Anya Taylor-Joy. I know we've used her quite often as well, but recently she got a lot of praise for Emma, the movie Emma, and then
how about the Queen's Gambit?
The Queen's Gambit, yeah, I was getting there. The Queen's Gambit gave her a lot of praise. The witch was like her. That was. I didn't watch that movie. I refused because I knew it would make me feel dirty and bad, but I did see clips of it. But yeah, she's a very talented actress, and I think she just fits that. You get what I'm saying about like the period. Like, she's definitely fits these like period roles very well. I think she would pull that off.
All right. I do. She's like my favorite actress working right now. I'm looking forward to seeing what she comes up with next. So let's see if it's Princess Bride in our fantasy movie. And hey, it is.
Hey. what about
Tales She Blows?
The star of the show are Wesley.
Wesley. Who do you got? I've been saying first for me all night.
Well, it's someone that we have used before. Again, but I feel like it's the right pick. Wesley's very charismatic. And I was like, I need an actor who's played a character that oozes charisma, that is basically charisma incarnate. A character that we have already voiced several times on this episode, and that's Belle! Luke Evans. Luke Evans playing basically just Gaston, but a little more kind-hearted. And hey, he'll get the girl. But can you imagine him saying, "Hello, Buttercup, come over here and give me a kiss."
If only we picked my pick.
As you wish.
If only Luke Evans sounded like that.
He does all the time. And he bounces his head around and says, "Drop your sword, Belle.
Drop your jaws, Belle. We're going to have sex.
Kill the beast." He, instead of when they go to break into the castle, he riles up an army of angry villagers that think a beast lives in the castle, and that's how he gets in.
That's right. He tricks them good.
Yeah. But yes, Luke Evans is my pick.
Luke Evans. I'm going with someone we've never picked.
Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, he's actually known for his work in the theater on Broadway, but you have seen him in Les Miserables, and that is Aaron Tveit. He plays not Marius, But the other guy, his good buddy, who's like, red, the blood of angry men.
Like the leader of the rebellion. Yeah,
I can't remember this character's name.
And they all die.
Yeah, the one that dies. He's sitting. He's sitting in that empty chair over there.
Empty chairs and empty tables.
Very talented, whether it's singing or just acting in general. But damn it, he's handsome.
Hey, how about?
So I saw him, and I originally was going to have him be my Inigo to have like vibes of Mandy Patinkin being a theater actor and stuff. But I looked at that man, I'm like, he's Wesley.
Indeed.
So let's see what the coin of destiny decides. Ugh. And it is heads again.
Hey, it's my movie now, bitch. Speaking of The Princess Bride, directed by Mark Webb, Humpadink played by Ewan Rion. Or Robert De Niro playing a grandpa. Fezzik played by The Big Show. Inigo played by Pedro Pascal. Buttercup played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And Wesley played by Luke Evans. So with that being said, I kind of at my hard out here. Need to get going. So I'm just going to close out the show. Is that fine by you?
Hey, you know, it's Valentine's time, so I understand. You got to go see about a girl, and you know, if you need to leave, if you got to go, as you wish.
Indeed. So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our first primary site. That's where we post the show to first, and subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you find podcasts, we'll be there. You can also find us at The Bros Movie Pod on Twitter. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips, GIFs, memes, things Gus makes, etc., etc. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Go to Facebook. It won't be inconceivable if you type in The Brothers Movie Factory and we happen to be there. Click on it, like us, share what along as I like to post things. Oh, shit. I like to post memes and links to the thing Ben mentioned a moment ago. I butchered that, but you get the point. You hear it every week, damn
yeah,
it.
Indeed.
You can find us on Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
Indeed. So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers.